Chapter 7. Slow Steps Forward. I have learned all that I have written through experience and persecution. Mary Baker Eddy. Mrs. Eddy had learned from experience that every truth she uttered and every step she took would be resisted by even her most devout and devoted students. As early as 1878, when Mrs. Eddy made a statement of absolute truth at a meeting of her small band of followers, Clara Choate recalled, quote, "That small company seemed like a battlefield between truth and error. Even dear Dr. Eddy, in his quiet, patient manner and tender voice, tried to enter a conciliatory compromise. But Mrs. Eddy heroically stood her ground," end quote. And one student, quote, "almost in temper, with apparent disgust, coldly left the meeting," end quote. Could her students only have obeyed and followed their leader, their progress would have been a marvel to cause all the world to wonder. But instead, the leader had defection after defection from her ranks because her truth antagonized the error her students would cling to. In 1893, she had written to Mr. Kimball, "I have learned from bitter experience that the head instructed before the heart is ready costs me and our cause dangerous difficulties and sore defeats." One of her bitter experiences occurred in 1888, when most of her students in Boston left in a body, forsaking both the truth they had been proclaiming and their leader. Mrs. Eddy said at that time to her faithful William B. Johnson that she found it difficult to sleep at night because so many wonderful things, ways, means and results, at which the world would marvel, kept coming to her, but she did not dare utter one word of them, because the revelation might shake the faith of even the few loyal students. Mrs. Eddy was immediate in following God's direction, but she had learned to introduce progressive steps or changes as gradually as possible, in the effort to keep her followers at least facing in the right direction. It is altogether possible that mind had directed her to discontinue the teaching of obstetrics following the normal and obstetric classes in the summer of 1900. But pursuing a gradual course, she had her church amend a bylaw to read, quote, "Beginning with the year 1901, the term for teaching obstetrics commences 6 months after the close of the college term," end quote. A number of sentinels and journals announced that the 1901 obstetrics class would convene October 21st, and that, quote, "application must be made to Alfred E. Baker," end quote. In October, the notices also stated, quote, "Anyone having a degree of CSB or CSD may become an applicant for the obstetric class, which convenes October 21st, 1901. This includes the 1901 June class," end quote. Neither the Sentinel nor the journal gave a report of the class, nor any indication whether it was held. Early in 1902, a notice in the Sentinel stated, "Article 34 of said church manual has been repealed," end quote. At that date, Article 34 was titled Obstetrics, and all four sections dealt with its teaching. At the same time, Article 31, now 28, which had read, Section 1. There shall be a Board of Education, under the auspices of the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, consisting of 4 members, a president, a vice president, a teacher of Christian Science, and a teacher of obstetrics, was amended to read, quote, Board of Education, consisting of 3 members, eliminating the teacher of obstetrics. Obstetrics is not science and will not be taught, end quote. Another issue which arose in 1901 had received this gradual treatment. When there was agitation for public debating about Christian Science, the leader wrote, quote, A Word to the Wise, end quote, Miscellany, page 223, in which she said, quote, Avoid for the immediate present public debating clubs, end quote. But for ears that could not hear, she also included the following in the same issue of the Sentinel. Church Bylaw. The Christian Science Board of Directors shall elect annually, subject to the approval or the disapproval of the pastor emeritus, a, quote, committee on debate, end quote, consisting of not less than 4 members. A member of this church shall not debate on Christian Science in public debating assemblies who is not a member of this committee. What a circuitous route she had to take to lead her dull disciples to see that debating was not a proper method for presenting Christian Science. Irving C. Tomlinson had been involved with the mental work on the Woodbury trial. He was also the first reader in the church nearest Mrs. Eddy's home in Concord. And now the tail of the serpent endeavored to cast this earnest student down. Mrs. Jenny A. Speed had attended the Concord Church for several months when she consulted Reverend Tomlinson as a Christian Science practitioner in November of 1899. 2 years later, in the fall of 1901, she was claiming that Mr. Tomlinson, quote, did not use reasonable skill and care, and that the plaintiff thereby suffered damage, end quote. Mrs. Eddy's Concord attorney, General Frank S. Streeter, and his junior partner, Alan Hollis, represented Mr. Tomlinson, and said in their statement for the defense, From the time of Mrs. Speed's first attack until Mr. Tomlinson's services were first requested, she was under the general care of Dr. McMurphy. This term of treatment amounts to 660 days. Mr. Tomlinson treated her 4 days. She paid him $1. And now wants this jury to award her damages in the sum of $6,000. Mr. Streeter also said in his argument, Why was this suit brought? Was it brought for damages or for making an attack on a religion which today has 1 million followers? The attack is an attack upon the theory that disease may be cured by prayer. The fundamental thing which Mr. Tomlinson taught Mrs. Speed was that he relied solely on the power of God, sought by prayer to effect relief. In my belief, this woman is no more a factor in this litigation than is the gilded dome of the State House a factor in making our laws. This is an assault on the Christian religion. You will be asked to say that prayer is fraud. Mr. Tomlinson's proposition is that the power of God can cure sickness through prayer. I don't envy the condition of mind of men who stand up and say it is a lie. That the power of God can't heal, is this man a cheat because he believes that prayer will cure the sick? Then you have got to declare against the Christian ministers who stand in the pulpits in these United States. The trial at the October term of the Superior Court in Concord was not unlike the accusations of, quote, the rabbis who crucified Jesus and called him a deceiver, end quote. Message for 01, page 9. Nonetheless, it resulted in a disagreement of the jury, which left the case just where it started. Mrs. Eddy turned to the thousand other things demanding her attention and directed Reverend Tomlinson to do the same. But the fact that this case was still pending could have been one of the reasons for the decision to have Tomlinson and his sister occupy the residential portion of Christian Science Hall, where Dr. Baker and his wife had lived since 1898. One of the many letters the leader wrote during the closing month of 1901 was to George Kinter in Buffalo, New York, on December 2nd. Her words to him have helped many a student. Trust your God, our God, in divine science. There is no other way than for us to trust always. This I have proven consistently for 40 years. Can you, will you do the same, my beloved student? Remember this and live continually in the thought and attitude of trust, confident expectation of good. Nothing else can do for you what this can. On December 21st, she wrote two letters to her Boston board. The first, quote, to the watchers who are mistaken, end quote. Beloved students, disband your meeting today and never meet again to do what is not carried out scientifically. Each one do the work of daily duty. Each one realize the allness of God, good, and that there is no opposite evil. Do not meet together to discuss or to direct the prayers of scientists, unless I call you together. Each one pray daily and not ask amiss. I have known of the discord before of prayer that is amiss. You all can know that newspaper men will not publish aught against Christian Science. Please know this, and also know that you can do this separately as well as together. With love, Mother, M. B. Eddy. Beloved student, I forgot to say this. Take up nobody personally, but let your prayer be impersonal, and God will bless the right. With love, Mother. Do not think of me or my affairs. Let God do this, and you invoke a general blessing. She was having to say to these students what she had written to Mr. Kimball the previous spring. Quote, none can see what I see. Hence the wisdom of faith in me. End quote. Plus the instruction she had given in her message in June. Message for 01, page 20. Quote, the Christian Scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. End quote. A statement received in December was from her first student, Hiram Crafts, and was added to the collection of letters, statements, and documents for her autobiographical sketch. Several letters written in January of 1902 by her directors and other students were added to this collection. However, the following letter written by Mrs. Eddy to Augusta Stetson on January 8th of the new year was not related to that project. My beloved student, you have sent me a beautiful tea jacket. I am sorry to give you so much trouble, even though I have little else all my time. Now, dear one, remember, you cannot be swamped or harmed by malicious animal magnetism. God good is your life, health, hope, salvation. Then what is there left to harm you? God knows all about our every need and will build your church edifice if you do not make it a skyscraper. But the divine mind makes the human meek and lowly in spirit, binds up all wounds and heals the sick and weary ones. You are healed, and every trial of your faith in good makes you stronger and better if you improve this lesson from love. You are able to judge of the interest of your church. Let not a single element of discord, outside or inside, trouble you. Do right, and love will bless you. There is no harm in doing rightly before a stated time, meeting, or assembly. My whole heart thanks you for your childlike care of my wardrobe, and God will bless your every good deed. Be happy in well-doing. Be happy this and every year. Mary Baker Eddy. Mrs. Stetson, more than any other individual, helped Mrs. Eddy with her wardrobe. Many, many of Mrs. Eddy's letters to Augusta expressed thanks for her care in this area or for some particular item of apparel. Mrs. Eddy's ability to turn her whole attention from one topic to another was phenomenal. As soon as the plates for the revision of Science and Health had been cast, establishing the numbered lines, she had had Mr. Conant start his final work on the concordance. Early in 1902, she called Alfred F. Conant and William Dana Orcutt to Pleasant View for a conference requesting the latter to please bring his drawings of his new type. Mr. Orcutt was delighted. This was his pet project, though totally unrelated to the work at hand. When Mrs. Eddy received Mr. Orcutt at Pleasant View, she said, "I hope Mr. Mackenzie has made it clear to you how pleased I am with the new edition. Today, we have to talk about the concordance. In making that book, you will be dealing with Mr. Conant, who will join us in half an hour. But first, I want to hear about your new type." Then she gave her undivided interest and attention to the topics nearest William Dana's heart. In half an hour, Mr. Conant was summoned, and the conversation turned to the concordance easily and naturally. Orcutt wrote, "Her ability to change from one topic to another with such consummate ease continued to amaze me. The earlier subject was not left hanging in the air, but was completely finished, at least for the time being. When that topic came to be taken up again, Mrs. Eddy would make the contact with perfect accuracy and would carry on from the previous point as if the discussion had never been interrupted. Mr. Conant presented their plan for the concordance to Mr. Orcutt, with only an occasional comment from Mrs. Eddy. When she was satisfied that it had been presented exactly as she wished it, the conference was terminated. The leader's attention may have turned next to the autobiographical material she had been collecting, where a copyright was applied for, on February 12th. On February 13th, 1902, a copyright was issued for Footprints Fadeless by Mary Baker G. Eddy, published by Joseph Armstrong. Most probably, it was not published at that time, for she wrote of Footprints Fadeless to William D. McCracken in 1902, stating that it was a record of her early history, but she did not want it known as yet that she had written it. Her footprints, as well as her identity, needed to be hidden a little longer from the world. When future generations would seek to find the footprints of the Revelator to this age, they would rejoice in her dedication and the words she chose to preface her text of Footprints Fadeless. To the patient, glad toilers in the vineyard of our Lord, I lovingly dedicate my footprints. Mary Baker Eddy. Footprints that perhaps another, sailing o'er life's solemn main, a forlorn and shipwrecked brother, seeing, shall take heart again. Longfellow, from A Psalm of Life. Oh, sometimes gleams upon our sight, through present wrongs, the eternal right. And step by step, since time began, we see the steady gain of man. Whittier, from Old and New. On January 22, 1902, Mrs. Eddy wrote, quote, "To whom it may concern," end quote. Miscellany, page 223, lines 11 to 19, which she had published in both the Sentinel and the Journal, together with a bylaw for the lecturers, which was adopted January 28th. This bylaw read in part, "It is the duty of the Board of Lectureship to include in each lecture a true and just reply to public topics condemning Christian Science, and bear true testimony to the facts pertaining to the life and character of our pastor emeritus." Mr. Tomlinson was also the victim of attempted character assassination, and understood the importance of refuting these attacks against the leader. So he was a help in this area, as her letter to her directors on January 25th regarding this bylaw indicates. "Nothing could injure our cause more than the general silence that prevails on the topic of your leader's character. This silence is causing the press to publish Peabody's lies, for it looks as if the Board of Lectureship was ashamed to speak in defense of your leader, or has nothing to say in her behalf. Pass this bylaw and publish it in the next Sentinel, and I will write to the members of the board to do their duty, and Mr. Tomlinson will also write to the board on this subject." None of the students at the turn of the century could differentiate between the Christian Science movement and the organization. Mrs. Eddy was ever and always teaching the importance of healing over all else, while the students became more and more interested and involved in organizing churches and building buildings. When she first brought Ezra Buswell to Concord, she endeavored unsuccessfully to impress him with the fact that she did not want a church, but healing in Concord. Soon after Tomlinson began reading at the Concord Church, she wrote him at length on the subject. Part of her letter, written in April 1899, stated, "I am becoming in need of rest and peace, to an extent beyond what you see. I have a problem to work out that you will not have for many years. If you and others give me not sufficient chance to do it, the science is not demonstrated. I did not want a church so near me as Concord. I have all I should do for mine in Boston. But Mr. Buswell started the Sunday service without my proposing it, and then ran out. Could get no place or hall fit to use. Then, to save dishonor to our cause, I got the hall. My next step to organize was influenced by others that I do not name. Now I see the care is increased, that I need diminished, and if there were no Sunday services but healers here, I sincerely believe it would be better for me and the world. I seem to be beyond this organized work. I have had my experience, and it worries me more than all else. If only I had what time I could work to give to writing, it would do more good than I can tell. God governs me. When I sent for Mr. B., I told him I did not want a church or Sunday services which lead to it, but healing done where I was. This was God's first order, and in 33 years I have not yielded to depart from His first order without being driven back to take it up." The leader was leading in the true way, while endeavoring to show this way to her true followers, but they could not see it. Hence her words, quote, "I seem to be beyond this organized work. I have had my experience, and it worries me more than all else," end quote. It is probable that she tried to make this same point with Dr. Eddy and his wife when they first came to Concord. The point was, not that healing should be first and church organization second, but that her followers should turn first and only to healing and away from the organization of churches. In January of 1902, Mr. Tomlinson recorded in his diary that Mrs. Eddy said, quote, "I do not believe in much organization in church. The churches are over-organized," end quote. But she did something much more emphatic at this same time in directing Dr. and Mrs. Baker to follow in the way she was leading. In February, the Bakers moved from Christian Science Hall in Concord, New Hampshire, to Brookline, Massachusetts. Both Alfred and Anna Baker were listed in the March 1902 journal as practitioners in Brookline. And on the 25th of February, the directors passed the bylaw Mrs. Eddy sent to them as one of their private bylaws. But they did not understand it. Mrs. Eddy's letter stated, "No member of the Mother Church shall form a church organization or erect a church edifice in Brookline, Massachusetts, until a bylaw shall be passed permitting such organization or edifice. Do not publish the bylaw relative to the church in Brookline. But should you ever hear of any movement looking toward a church organization or edifice there, then notify the parties of the bylaw. There was a good deal of speculation as to her purpose for this bylaw, but there was no understanding. Perhaps Gilbert Carpenter, though he speculated as did all the others, came closest in his statement. Quote, "One point is certain. Mrs. Eddy did not make any moves from the standpoint of human opinion. Acting under inspiration, she did not gauge a situation according to its present appearance, but saw into the future and took care of that which the human mind knew nothing about." End quote. Perhaps the leader's action was for our generation. As her followers, we must consider the facts that she was not a member of her church, that she did not attend church, and that she rarely allowed her household to attend church. Her true church was a daily and an hourly affair, not a material organization. And, quote, "This organized work worries me more than all else," end quote. It is clearly seen that in 1902, the leader is pushing some of her closest students out of organization, no doubt with the hope that church would become a daily and an hourly animus in their experience, even as it was in that of their leader. She was pushing the Bakers out of organization, but not out of the Mother Church. How, oh how, could she teach her students the difference between true church and material organization? A watch for her mental workers on March 25th points to this problem. Henrietta Schaffrau recorded, "Mother asks you, drop all patience and take for your one unworthy patient the Mother Church of Christian Science, which needs healing from its sins this day." The previous day, March 24th, the leader had had Carol Norton made a circuit lecturer, which meant that he would be lecturing in any of the states plus Canada. Judge Ewing was the only one who had done this heretofore, with the exception of Judge Clarkson's brief experience in Christ's work. The leader may have been thinking of Clarkson's departure and the sad experience before this disciple when she wrote in her message for 1901, "What Jesus' disciples of old experienced, his followers of today will prove, namely, that a departure from the direct line in Christ costs a return under difficulties, darkness, doubt, and unrequited toil will beset all their returning footsteps." This paragraph ends with, quote, "Only a firm foundation in truth can give a fearless wing and a sure reward," end quote. One's foundation in truth was not firm if it lacked a true understanding and appreciation of the Revelator to this age. This was doubly important for the lecturers and was a concern for Mrs. Eddy, as the April 10th watch preserved by Henrietta Schaffrau implies. Work for lecturers. A city that is set upon a hill cannot be hid, and the life of their leader must be shown as it is. Never did I neglect Jesus in my sermons in the first days of Christian Science. Now they must not forget me. The scandalous attacks on the discoverer and founder of Christian Science will stop if the truth about her be shown to the world. Judge Ewing had done better than most in showing this truth to the new world, and now he would be taking it to the old world in the very first overseas lecture tour. In her Easter message to the Concord Church, Miscellany, page 155, Mrs. Eddy began by saying, quote, "Allow me to thank you for lending to me your good church leader, Reverend I. C. Tomlinson, a few days in the week, and on the seventh day, cheering him with your earnest attention," end quote. This close association with the leader gave Tomlinson a good deal of growth, and his work saw fruition in his lawsuit with a verdict in his favor on April 15th. A few days earlier, he had written the following letter. Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire. To the Christian Scientists of Baltimore, Maryland. Dearly beloved brethren, our mother in Israel asks me to reply to your glad letters containing the joyful news of the spirit of unity manifest in her Baltimore children. When your Easter anthems reached her, she called us to her to hear the good news. And as she read to us your Christian correspondence, which so rejoiced her mother heart, tears of gladness glistened in her eyes. These signs of the risen Christ betoken the coming fulfillment of our great Master's prayer, quote, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. End quote. Our revered mother wishes these beloved students to know that their obedience has brought her much joy. Your brother in divine love, Irving C. Tomlinson. A rift in the Baltimore Church 5 years earlier had caused one faction to separate and start Second Church. There were sincere students in both churches, but working in true unity is something few have accomplished, even today. The mental workers in Mrs. Eddy's home came closer to this accomplishment than have any others in all history. But even they fell short of what the leader envisioned. Very possibly, the unity manifested in Baltimore in the spring of 1902 was one of the results of the leader's contacts with Emily Hergenroeder of that city. The result the world saw was the beautiful portrait the artist produced under Mrs. Eddy's direction. The leader's letter to the artist on the 17th of April stated, "I can never express my full appreciation of the loving care which prompted the dear church in Baltimore to give a portrait of me to the world. I have often wondered, when thinking of the indifference that other churches have shown on this point, which does concern the history of Christian Science at present, and will in the future more than today. Those who are concerned today about the history of Christian Science, are indeed grateful to the Baltimore Church and to Emily Hergenroeder for giving to the world this visible record of our leader's appearance in 1902.